It's good to be back. We'll be in Psalm chapter 7 tonight, Psalm 7. And come to find out when we went back to Mansfield for a little bit, there was a Bigfoot sighting in Mansfield. And a hunter said he saw Bigfoot. And then when the Bigfoot investigators went out there, there were no tracks. So we learned something new about Bigfoot. He doesn't travel on his feet, I guess, and leave any tracks. No evidence that he was there. So I don't know. Psalm 7. Left tracks in Oregon. Psalm 7. We're looking tonight at cheap grace. Cheap grace. Psalm 7, verses 3 through 5. O Lord my God, if I have done this, if there be iniquity in my hands, if I've rewarded evil unto him that was at peace with me, yea, I have delivered him that without cause is mine enemy. Let the enemy persecute my soul and take it. Yea, let him tread down my life upon the earth and lay mine honor in the dust. Lord, as we come before you, thank you for the opportunity to gather in your house. Good to be back tonight with your people here at Emmanuel Baptist Church. Just ask you, Lord, to meet with us. Ask you to give me the words you'd have me to say. In Jesus' name, amen. There'll be times in the Word as you study it that you encounter passages that are just difficult for you to wrap your mind around. And tonight's one of those passages. Just the fact that David asked God and was even pleading with God to allow his enemies to catch up to him, overtake him, and even trample him down into the very earth if he had any wrongdoing towards them that caused them to be his enemy is difficult for us to wrap our minds around. My boys have never come up to me and said, "Give me what I deserve. I've done wrong." I've never went to any one of my bosses in life, including pastors that I've served under, and said, "Give me what I deserve. I've done wrong." I never went to my mother when I was growing up and said, "Give me what I deserve. I've done wrong." Human nature is to desire not to get what we deserve. Human nature at its core looks for a way out of getting what we deserve. But David says in verse 3, "O Lord my God, if I have done this, if there be iniquity in my hands." Basically, David is saying, if I've done this, if I've caused this, if my having enemies is my fault, if it is of my own doing, if I have iniquity in my hands, he continues down in verse 4, "If I have rewarded evil unto him that was at peace with me, yea, I have delivered him that without cause is mine enemy." Now he's going to take it a step further. If people were at peace with me until I rewarded them evil and now they're my enemy. And then he takes it a step further in verse 5. "Let the enemy persecute my soul and take it. Yea, let him tread down my life upon the earth and lay mine honor in the dust. Selah." This speaks to the character of David. David had more character than any of us. How many people do you know that would tell you or would honestly go before God because they have the mentality of, "God, give me what I deserve"? Sometimes we watch a high-profile case on TV and we strongly believe that a man or a woman is guilty and they get up there wanting mercy. And we say to ourselves, how could they desire mercy after what they've done? But I tell you, at the core of it all, they possess the same human nature and human propensities that you and I do, and that when caught, we desire mercy. If you were pulled over tonight on the way home for some form of driving infraction, you would not beg the officer for judgment. You would not beg him to write you a ticket. You're going to be trying to get out of it. You would desire mercy. With mankind, a natural desire is not found to experience judgment over mercy. When we consider David in this passage, this is one of the greatest portraits that I can think of personal accountability and responsibility for your actions. But not only that, it leads to a great admiration for the grace of God. When you and I believe that we are owed grace, we're owed mercy, and somehow deserving of it, it cheapens grace. A theologian of many years ago said this. It's lengthy, but I'll read it to you. Cheap grace means grace sold on the market like cheap jack's wares. The forgiveness of sin and the consolation of religion are thrown away at cut prices. Grace is presented as the church's inexhaustible treasury from which she showers blessings with generous hands without asking questions or fixing limits. Grace without price, grace without cost. The essence of grace, we suppose, is that the account has been paid in advance, and because it has been paid, everything can be had for nothing. Since the cost was infinite, the possibilities of using it and spending it are infinite. What would grace be if it were not cheap? Cheap grace is the preaching of forgiveness without requiring repentance, baptism without church discipline, communion without confession, absolution without personal confession. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship, grace without the cross, grace without Jesus Christ living and incarnate. Costly grace is the treasure hidden in the field. For the sake of it, a man will go and sell all that he has. It is the pearl of great price to buy which the merchant will sell all his goods. It is the kingly rule of Christ. For whoso sake a man will pluck out the eye which causes him to stumble. It is the call of Jesus Christ at which the disciple leaves his nets and follows him. We're almost done. Costly grace is the gospel which must be sought again and again, the gift which must be asked for, the door at which a man must knock. Such grace is costly because it calls us to follow. And it is grace because it calls us to follow Jesus Christ. It's costly because it cost a man his life. And it's grace because it gives man the only true life. It is costly because it condemns sin, and grace because it justifies the sinner. Above all, it is costly because it cost God the life of his Son. You were bought with a price. And what has cost God much cannot be cheap for us. Above all, it is grace because God cannot reckon his Son too dear a price to pay for our life, but delivered him up for us. Costly grace is the incarnation of God. So you see what's being said. Cheap grace lets you roam free. Cheap grace lessens the cross. Cheap grace lessens our need for Jesus Christ. Cheap grace makes Christ the one we call on for grace and mercy after doing what we want without limitation, as you would ring a bell for a butler. It's willfully making messes of ourselves and then calling on God to clean it up. And I dare say that cheap grace is taught whenever a man will lift high the grace of God, but never challenge anyone not to take it for granted by living however they want. In simpler terms, it's preaching grace. Why not preaching against sin? You know, there are many churches today, and there are some. I had someone tell me one time, then I looked further into it. I never really heard it called this, but they said, I go to a grace church. And pretty much what that is, in a nutshell, is they're not going to really say anything too confrontational. there's not going to be much preaching against sin. There's not going to be much preaching on biblical separation and holiness and righteousness before God. There's not going to be much mention of that. Sin naming. You name sin, then you're somehow another shaming people. Or something along those lines. And so pretty much you come and you sit under the teaching or the preaching, if you can call it that, and then you leave and you're not offended by anything. Nothing was, and by the way, the word's a mirror. So when the word is lifted up, you're going to see yourself, and I'm going to see myself for who we are. But when it's not, then there's no conviction. So preaching grace, why not preaching against sin? Preaching grace, why not preaching biblical separation? Preaching grace, but ignoring what God commands and expects. There's a very challenging passage of Scripture in Romans 6 that we'll get to in a moment. But believers were being challenged in the area of grace. And the challenge was this, don't cheapen grace. You know, we have grace. Yes, God has given it to us. Yes, it is for you. Yes, it is for me. But when we expect grace, it then cheapens our actions because we feel like we can do what we want and grace will abound. You know, there are those who do not believe in eternal security. And some of them, they'll tell you why they don't believe in eternal security is because there are those who essentially teach and preach some form of doctrine that once you are saved, that you can essentially do what you want at that point. And there are people who reject that extreme over there, and then they end up going to the other side of the road where a ditch is also and saying that there's no eternal security. So we got to be careful with that. Romans 6:1, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? So Paul's addressing saved people here, and he's asking a question. It's an important one. Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? And then he answers his own question. God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Know ye not that so many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death? Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. So grace is not a license to sin. Now the reason there are oftentimes be consequences from God for sin is because he knows that if we never felt the chastisement for our sin, we would undervalue his grace. He knows that we would take it lightly. Now, I tell you what, and then I was looking back at my childhood and looking back even or looking presently sometimes at my boys, you know, sometimes, and I mean, they know when you're on trips and stuff like that, you're on vacation, you want them to enjoy themselves, you're a little bit more lenient than what you'd be at home. They know that. They know you're not going to quite correct them in the store like you would if you were in the car or if you were at home. They know that. they know the times when you're going to extend more grace. And what do they do at times? They take advantage of the grace that's being extended. We undervalue grace at times, and we take it for granted at times. I knew kids growing up that lived in a home where there was more lenience than consequences. Those parents thought they were doing their kids a favor. Looking at those kids now as they're my age, their parents ruined them. Those children took that grace as liberty to do what they wanted, and mercy would always be there. They knew they could do what they wanted to do, and most of the time, there would be no correction. Now, this is why consequences are good for us. Do I like consequences? No, I do not like consequences. But this is why consequences are good for us. This is why God allows us to go through things as consequences for our actions. So when grace does come our way, we have a greater appreciation for it. We're more thankful for it because we did not get what we could have received. I believe if we keep the mindset here of I deserve this, when God does not give us what we deserve, we would be that much more at his feet praising him for not giving us what we do deserve. When I was growing up, I knew that when I'd done wrong, there would be consequences, which is a good thing. It might be a stern conversation, a serious conversation. It might be a look. Sometimes even by a look, I knew that I was on my way, if not already, in trouble. It might be the rod of correction. It might would be time out. It might would have something that I enjoyed taken from me. I might have to miss out on something fun or miss out on a trip, sometimes even a ball game when I played sports, basketball or football. There was some times that, you know, I had to sit out. I had to sit out from it. And I tell you what, looking back, I tell you, that was one of the things that, you know, got my attention. I felt the pressure of my team. My teammates were like, hey, we need you. I had a girlfriend in high school. There was sometimes if I was in trouble, I couldn't talk to her on the phone. Then I get in pressure from her. I can't talk to you tonight because you're in trouble. So you see how you can use those things, use those things to your advantage. But there was consequences. And you might think that's extreme, but as a parent, you observe your children when consequences come. Now, when my kids do things, I'm watching them with the consequences that I give them. And if the consequences that I give them do not bring about some form of reformation, then I know the consequence isn't enough to them, which means I got to find something else. I have to do something else or the same thing, just more. If you never get through to them, you lose them. But I knew even growing up, there was consequences for wrongdoing. I want my boys to know that. That there are consequences for wrongdoing. And I tell you what, there's, and even growing up in life, you do things right, you won't always get praised, you won't always get rewarded. But when you do things wrong, there will always be consequences. Always. They will follow you through life. Consequences, by the way, are given to us as a result of wrongdoing for two reasons. And the one that most people get hung up on is punishment. And that's why a lot of parents, they don't want to bring the consequences from their children's sin, upon them is because they hyper-focus on the punishment. Even society, when it comes to consequences, they hyper-focus on the punishment part. But there's another part of it. It's reclamation. We stepped out of bounds. Consequences are intended to bring us back where we need to be. So without correction, it's not going to happen. Now, when we do wrong and God extends grace, unmerited favor, that means he could have given us what we deserve, but he didn't. And now remember, grace and mercy are nearly the same word. Grace is unmerited favor. Mercy is not giving us what we deserve. So again, in Psalm 7, verses 3 through 5, David doesn't sound like a man that has cheapened grace. David doesn't sound like a man that would set out to do wrong and just expect God's grace. And I've heard people say it, even RU students at time dealing with them, they just said, you know what, I knew what it was, I know that it's wrong. And I did it anyway, and before I did it, I just said, the Lord will forgive me afterwards. David doesn't sound like a man that was living his life this way, who said, I'll do what I want, and then grace is going to meet me. Mercy is going to meet me. Forgiveness is going to meet me. I want you to notice something lastly. And we'll reread verses 3 through 5. O Lord, my God, if I've done this, if there be iniquity in my hands, if I've rewarded evil unto him that was at peace with me, yea, I have delivered him that without cause is mine enemy. Let the enemy persecute my soul and take it. Yea, let him tread down my life upon the earth and lay mine honor in the dust. Selah. So I want you to notice something here. Lastly, there's a personal examination before God. I encourage you to ask God if you did wrong. We can't ask ourselves. We're biased. You ask her, hey, self, did I do wrong? You're probably going to say no. You did right. You ask someone else. Most people are not going to be honest enough with you. Most people won't. Most people know that most people can't handle the truth, including them. People go to other people and they say, here's what I did. Did I do right or wrong? Don't ask them. Go ask the Lord if you did right or wrong. Get in the Word and find out if you did right or wrong. You've been saved for any amount of time. You know enough Bible to probably already know if you did right or wrong. And that's God telling you, revealing to you whether or not you did right or wrong. Don't ask yourself. Don't ask others. Ask God to examine you. He'll tell you the truth. He's not afraid to tell you the truth. Sometimes we're afraid to tell people the truth. Sometimes we're just scared to tell people the truth. Sometimes we don't want somebody to be our enemy. Sometimes we're worried that we'll lose them as a friend if we tell them the truth. Worried they won't like us anymore if we tell them the truth. Ask God to examine you. He will tell you the truth. That's what David did. David's going before the Lord, asking the Lord, am I at fault? And I tell you, in every trial that we're in, and that's what David was in. David's in a trial. In every trial that we're in, there needs to be a time of self-examination. Because there are times, not every time we're in a trial we did something wrong, but there are times that we are in a trial because we did something wrong. In every trial that you're in, there needs to be a time of self-examination where you go to God and you ask Him, have I caused this trial? Trials are given at times to get us right when we're out of line, but also to keep us right. Because when you're in a trial, you turn to the Lord. It's human nature. We turn to the Lord in trials more than we do in seasons where things are going well. We turn to Him more. So trials are given to get us right, but also to keep us right. And God will be honest with you in return. On the flip side, some trials we bring upon ourselves. There's been trials at times in my life that I knew, even in the midst of them, that I had brought them on myself. And sometimes it is pretty apparent to us at times. I've got out of line before, and as a result, somebody was upset with me. To some degree, that's a trial that I put myself in. Somebody's upset with me now because I said something I shouldn't. And now I have this trial, I have this situation going on, and it's all because of what I did. I've gone out, and there was one time I went out and knee-jerked and bought a car. Think I told y'all that story. And then Sarah gets pregnant a couple months later. We outgrew the car. I just got 2 months ago. The Lord knew that. The Lord knew all that was going to happen. Then I got two cars that we won't be able to fit in 9 months. Had a Toyota Prius and a Hyundai Sonata, and both of those hybrid, and both of those won't fit six people. It was Wesley. Find out Wesley's coming. Life's been upside down ever since. That last one. I told Sarah, I said, he's the part of both of us that neither one of us knows what to do with. But he is us. Can't deny that one. And then I'm in a pickle. I'm in a situation that I put myself in. I cannot tell you how many times. Only the Lord knows how many pickles I put myself in. How many trials I put myself in. And we say hindsight's 20/20. And Curtis Hudson used to say hindsight's better than foresight, I think is what he used to say, but that's when we're relying on our own foresight instead of the Lord's foresight. But again, some trials we bring on ourselves, and if we'd like less of them, we go to God in self-examination and we say, is it I? Is the trial that I'm in of my own doing? Is it an attempt on your part to draw me nearer to you? Have I strayed and too far out to come back on my own? And do I need your help? The disciples done this when Jesus said, this night one of you will betray me. They responded, is it I? It was self-examination. It speaks to the humility of the disciples. Is it I? If I said tonight I had some type of foreknowledge, I said one of you is going to do this, the proper response, everybody should be examining themselves. Is it going to be me? Am I going to be the one that's going to do it? If we're in touch and with our humanity and the potential that we all have within us to get sideways, then we should come to the right answer and ask the question, is it I? So it was self-examination. And we see that in the part of David in verses 3-5 here of Psalm 7. So I trust you learned something tonight, once again, from the life of David. And it's important, again, not to cheapen God's grace. And it just blows my mind here, David's mentality. And again, certain passages we come to, and it's going to be hard for us to wrap our mind around it because it's so opposite of the way that we think. So opposite. And we know it's a God page thing. It's not an our page thing. It's a God page thing. And we got to get over on his page. And this is just one of them here tonight. But I trust you've been challenged tonight.